previously on Willing to Adapt.
Today, we are talking about The Princess Bride. The movie does a very beautiful job of essentially inviting us into the story.
And I was trying to think back, when did I first see it? I actually don't remember. Like, it's such a part of growing up in life.
So, real quickly, just for our listeners, prior to reading this, I didn't realize the book was a fictional abridgment, and so he kept on telling me to get the unabridged version.
I know.
And so I actually spent some time online looking for the unabridged version, and I'm like, nobody has an unabridged version. And then I finally realized, so I fell for it.
When I first read it, I was really excited to read it, but I was deeply confused.
Why is that?
Because I was similar to you in that I thought I found like an abridged version.
Oh.
And so I was trying to find the original version.
Yeah.
And I was really confused by that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is this just me? Am I losing it? Like,
that's funny.
Like, what's happening? The bad news is there was an accident not too far from here. And he's like, it may have affected the cows. So maybe for a few weeks, don't drink the milk in your coffee. Because Goldman, interestingly enough, was also a screenwriter.
Yes.
And so he actually wrote the screenplay for his own book.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think to his credit, he does a great job of writing the screenplay for it because he is not faithful to his book because he knows that the medium is different. And so he has to change things. It seemed like Goldman was really trying to be satirical when it comes to like fairy tales, but then also just storytelling.
Okay.
And so he didn't want to give readers or audiences, for the story specifically, he didn't want to give them what they expected.
Okay.
Like, he wanted to kind of play on those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, Hollywood didn't really want to make The Princess Bride because they didn't really know how to make it into a film. And they just didn't really think there was a market for it. The funny parts in the book are not the funny parts in the movie.
Yeah.
And the funny parts in the movie are not the funny parts in the book.
I'm Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt.
Rob Reiner has said in an interview, the only way he could ever make The Princess Bride is if he had three characters properly casted.
Mm-hmm.
And if any of them were not properly casted, the movie would not do well. And he said the three of them were Wesley, Buttercup, and Fezzik.
Interesting.
He says if you cannot cast all three, you don't have a film.
Yeah.
In the book, Goldman specifically had Andre the Giant in mind when he wrote Fezzik.
Okay.
Like he wrote
the character of
Fezzik.
He talks about
with
that.
Him in mind.
In the
book, there's even parts where he talks about his background and stuff that are similar to Andre the Giant's background.
Interesting.
Yeah, not the same, but similar.
Yeah, similar.
And so Andre the Giant was definitely one of the go-tos for the film. They had to audition multiple people.
Yeah.
And Andre the Giant had a super thick French accent and had never really acted at all.
Yeah.
And so they were really worried about that. And that's why they were auditioning other people. But Andre the Giant was like the biggest person they could find. And was technically the only one they wanted.
Yeah.
Ironically enough, because of his career in wrestling, for those who don't know Andre the Giant, I only knew him because of this film. And then that's how I became aware of him as a wrestler.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like, what else has he been in? And my dad's like, nothing.
Yeah. Like, no, I knew him as a wrestler because of the
80s. Right.
Well, WWF.
I was born in 93. But everybody has always said that Andre the Giant was like a sweetheart. Like he was just the friendliest, very friendly. But I always talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
And Anyway, so they, but because Fezzik is such a specific character and he's huge and stuff, but because of all the issues he had with wrestling,
mm-hmm.
they found out he actually couldn't hold much weight anymore. Oh. Like, he had a lot of back problems and stuff. So, like, in the scene with the Cliffs of Insanity where he has to be carrying all three of them,
yeah.
they're actually all strapped in to different harnesses and, like, cleverly disguised, like, they have, like, sitting on bike seats.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so, like, in the scene where he has to catch her near the end, mm-hmm. like, she's being suspended, like, repelled down, essentially, and... yeah, a lot of stuff like that. But, so, for Wesley, they were saying he's difficult to cast for because they need someone who's young and suave mm-hmm. and athletic, but also very witty and, like, almost sarcastic, but also, like, very romantic.
Yeah.
And so, like, they needed the balance there, and that can be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And they found it very, like, right away in Cary Elwes. Like, as soon as they found him, they're like, this is okay, we got you. In an interview, Cary Elwes, he didn't think he was going to get it. Apparently, he gave, like, he wanted to prove that he knew, like, American culture and stuff, mm-hmm. because Rob Reiner is American.
Yeah.
And apparently, he gave, like, a really bad impression of Fat Albert. And he's like, yeah, they're not going to hire me now. But then I think in a week or so, his agent had called him and he said, are you sitting down? He's like, no way. And he's like, yeah. He's like, they want me? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, you have my permission to forge my signature and give it back to them right away before they change their mind.
That's funny.
And so they got, you know, them and Fezzik and the one that took the longest was Buttercup.
Okay.
They went through hundreds of actresses looking for her. They literally did not cast Robin Wright mm-hmm. until a week before filming.
Dang.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, that's how long they were looking for her.
Yeah.
And she can be difficult because they needed someone who was really young, but someone who's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Because in the book and in the movie, kind of, it says she's the most beautiful woman and all these things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the only thing that she had really done before that she was known for is she was on a soap opera called Santa Barbara, I think it was.
Yeah, there used to be. I never watched it, but I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, she was on that. It was funny because my mom overheard me doing research for this. She's like, I used to watch that. I was like, so when she got hired for the film, did they just kill her character off? And she's like, probably.
Yeah.
But they hired her, and it worked out really well because she had this, like, strong will about her, mm-hmm. but in a way that wasn't, like, overpowering. Like, she was still very beautiful, mm-hmm. and she was able to be, she was still able to be kind of, for lack of a better word, the damsel.
Yeah.
But in a way that was, she was still very strong-willed and assured of herself.
Her femininity was not overpowered, basically.
Yeah. And it was funny because I guess even though she was raised in America, her stepfather was British. And so she had a perfect British accent.
That's funny.
For filming.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't speak that way normally, but she was very easily able to get into a British accent, which is what she speaks in the film.
That's funny, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, other than that, I think they just kind of went around and, like, Wallace Shawn, they never thought they would get, they didn't even think of Wallace Shawn. Like, when they landed on him, when mm-hmm. he came in for the audition, they're like, Wallace Shawn? Really? For Fizzini? Like, because they didn't think about him at all. Like, they thought that was not a good fit until they saw him in mm-hmm. the audition, and they're like, oh, he's great.
I know. It's like, you can't picture anyone in that role but
now, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Mandy Patinkin?
Mandy Patinkin. I don't know much about his casting. They didn't really go into anything I looked at, they didn't really go into how he got it, but I know he did a lot of Broadway and stuff. Like, he had come off a couple Sondheim things. I don't remember in the timeline when Sunday in the Park with George was, but he did that. That was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But when
Robin, what's his name?
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal.
So when they hired Billy Crystal, this is the fun part. When it came to his scenes as mm-hmm. Miracle Max.
Yeah.
Rob Reiner told him, forget the lines, just improvise.
I kind of wondered about that.
Yes.
Because that's when he's best, kind of his best routine.
Yeah, he says, don't worry about the lines, uh-huh. just improvise.
That's cool.
They had his scene, their filming was only supposed to be like a day mm-hmm. at most. It took 3 days.
Wow.
Because he kept improvising. He kept coming up with things, and then they kept laughing. Like, yeah. They just kept breaking character, and they said, like, it was supposed to be like 3 hours, and then it just took 3 days.
That's
like,
funny.
And so they kept kicking people out. They kicked Rob Reiner out because he kept laughing. And then they just like were slowly kicking more and more people off the set. And then they ended up having to kick Wesley out because he's supposed to be dead.
Yeah.
And he was laughing. And it's funny. Mandy Patinkin had said in an interview, the only injury he ever sustained during filming mm-hmm. was he had a bruised rib because he was holding in so much laughter. Because he had to be there because he had to give lines mm-hmm. so that Billy Crystal could respond.
Yeah.
But that's how you get some of the best lines from mm-hmm. Miracle Max.
Because like the whole have fun storming the castle, but I mean, that's another
and the
well.
The whole like, MLT thing. And
MLT?
Yeah, he says, he's like, true love. Yeah, it's the greatest thing in the world.
Except oh, a yes, good MLT. Except a good MLT. Mutton.
Lettuce and tomato. Where the mutton's nice and lean.
That was funny.
And the whole thing with like don't say that name. What? Humperdinck? Humperdinck. You know? Like all of that was all improvised. Like there's just so much they just improvised, and it's just so funny. That's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Yeah. No, it is a good part. It's a good scene.
That movie is so fantastic in that it is just chock full of very distinctive, memorable characters.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them really steal the show. Like, they almost work in consort.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, because, oh, and the other thing with Robin Wright is they knew that Buttercup was like the only real straight character.
Mm.
Like, she was the character in almost in every scene who, like, never really had humor.
Yeah.
Like, she had to carry the weight of the story.
I mean, outside of the lovey-dovey look she gives to Wesley, I think the only time she ever smiles is after, hello, lady.
Well, like, she's the one that never has any, like, line that's comedic.
Yeah.
She never has anything that is like that. Like, she's very straight acting the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Because even, like, the villains are funny.
Yes. Well, like, the albino.
Yes, the monk.
In the monk. In the book, he whispers.
Yes.
He's always whispering.
Yes.
And so when you read the book and then watch the movie, and all of a sudden he starts talking, and then clears his throat.
It's like, where am I? He's like, the pit of despair. Don't even, he's like, he's like, don't even think about it.
Yeah. I was like, that was well done.
Oh, it's so funny. It's too good.
Yeah.
And then Humperdinck's like, you know, I love to watch you torture people. He's like, but I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan. I have my wife's murder. Gilda to blame for it. But he says it so straight.
I know.
Like, so no nonsense. Yeah, so the movie actually did not do super well when it came out.
I did read that, yeah.
Which we've talked about a lot in many other things.
Mm-hmm.
And like other adaptations we've talked about before, it found new life in rentals.
VHS.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And now it's a classic.
I think, yeah, between that and people watching it on, like I said, TV mm-hmm. growing up. And I think that's what's the... I think we've mentioned this before with the advent of streaming and the loss right. of network TV, that some of these classics, I think, I kind of wonder... You know, will they be passed on to the next generation?
Unless someone is actively passing them down, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, a lot of media has changed for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to talk about some of the changes between the two? Other than what we've already talked about?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else there was. We talked about the Pit of Despair, Zoo of Death.
So there's the bit where, in the book, Buttercup basically like leaves Wesley when they leave the fire swamp. Like,
oh, yes.
In the book, it's written very much like, I would rather be alive,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm going to leave you now.
Yeah.
And in the movie, they changed it so it's a lot more... Because in the book, it's more practical and like, I'm taking care of myself. And in the movie, it's more like, I don't want him to die, so mm-hmm. I'm protecting him.
Plus, you get the reunion scene that was cut from the book in the movie. It's fairly short, but
a little bit. But then they cut in with the grandson. He's like, no kissing.
Yeah. which was a good nod to the book. But and so through that, it fits with kind of...
The movie plays a bit more into expectations.
Yes. And so another area that they changed was the thieves' quarters mm-hmm. versus the thieves' forest. Not big.
Yeah, well, it's funny because in the book there's a map, but even when they describe it, it's everything's really close.
Yes.
It seemed like the thieves' quarters was actually like in the castle.
Yeah, it was next.
Like in, on the castle like the grounds. Walls or something, yeah. Because the way that real castles work is there's like the main structure, but then like there's a couple of surrounding like walls, and mm-hmm. then there's like a big section where people can live, and there's like a market and stuff, and mm-hmm. so like it seemed like the thieves' quarters was there,
yeah,
which I thought was hilarious. And the Zoo of Death is on the castle grounds,
mm-hmm. yeah,
whereas in the movie the Pit of Despair is out in the forest somewhere,
yeah. And I think the thieves' forest kind of lent towards the fantastical of like Robin Hood, sure, and stuff, yeah. like that, yeah. What other differences were there? I'm trying to think through
just
them.
Small things. Like, they cut out a lot, obviously, for the, yeah. for the movie. There was a lot of characters that were cut out, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her parent, like Buttercup's parents are not in the movie at all.
Yeah, you never see them.
No, I mean, they're not needed, but...
No.
Like, there's a lot of nuances in the book, for mm-hmm. sure. You see a lot more of the king and the queen in the book. Mainly, it's just, you know, condensing, really.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a lot less backstory in the movie. They do a good job of giving you enough.
Yes.
Like, even like the throwaway line in the movie where Fezzik is not sure about killing Buttercup, and then Vizzini says, do you want me to leave you where I found you? Like, in Greenland? It's like, it's enough of a backstory that you know a little bit, you know, but mm-hmm. so you don't get nothing. But and then the one other thing I could think of, well, two things, is in the movie, she actually doesn't marry the prince because they skip over the vows and everything.
Yeah.
And so she never said I do to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like a technicality. And so she's not married, and it's not even a plot point, really.
Yeah.
Which I think cleans it up.
It does.
Like, in a lot of ways, the movie actually cleaned up some things and made it simple. And then it just gets rid of the whole thing about the countdown where, like, Wesley has 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, it was like, oh, no, he's back.
Yeah.
Like, it'll take him a little while to get his strength, but he's back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought it was funny how... Because that's the whole thing in the book about how... so that whole thing with the prince, and he's having Buttercup tie him up, and he's going to... It wasn't a fight to the death, but was it a fight to the pain?
Yes.
And so the whole time he's losing his strength, and he's on the bed. And so in the book, you know, he's lost. You know, the time has run out, and he tricks the prince into being tied up. Whereas in the book, I mean, in the movie, that didn't quite happen the same way.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think the movie handled that scene much better.
Yeah. No, I agree.
He, in the movie, for sure, Wesley is a lot more attentive to Buttercup.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, I don't know if it was... I think in some ways, it's supposed to be like messing with your expectations
mm-hmm.
with like how he treats her at times.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things he does in the book where he does this. But in the books, there's times, like in that scene especially, where he like calls her a baggage and mm-hmm. and stuff. Where I'm like, in the movie, that would never fly.
Doesn't he even slap her in the book?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
In the movie, he doesn't. He almost slaps her. He's like, that's a warning. But I think it's one of those things where like you get away with a lot more in a book than you can in a movie, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like in books, like sometimes there's like full on rape scenes in some things, and it's just hinted at in the movie because it's mm-hmm. visual and it's hard to handle, and you can leave more to imagination in a book and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like I said, it's a very different medium. You have to handle it differently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think in the book there seemed like a lot of conveniences,
mm-hmm.
and in the movie it seems to eliminate some of those conveniences.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
No, I think that's about it. I mean, outside of the, I don't know if you want to mention anything about the supposed sequel.
Not really. Goldman had hinted for a while that he would write a sequel to mm-hmm. The Princess Bride called Buttercup's Baby. He wrote like an opening chapter or two that appeared in an edition of the book. It obviously never happened because he died.
Yeah.
So there's not much to talk about.
Okay. No, I did read it. I read it. I liked it. Yeah, I did. I think what it did is it brings a bridge for those who enjoyed the movie, but may have been a little more disappointed in the realism that and satirical aspect that he added mm-hmm. to the book.
Satiricism.
Yeah, is that a word?
I think so.
Okay, and
it is now.
And I also was, I thought it was interesting in reading his intro because it was a very different William Goldman being presented than it was in the original for the original book.
Sure.
Yeah, and you saw basically. I think what he used that to do was to bring hope.
Yeah. Well, in the original book, he writes it very much like I said. The idea of life's not fair. Mm-hmm. Like what you're not going to get what you want all the time, and bad things are going to happen, and you're just going to be ready for it and stuff like that. And sometimes life gives you a bad hand, and you just got to accept it. And so on. And so you just have to like take advantage of the good things when you can, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's definitely more sad.
Yeah.
whereas the movie leans much more into the optimistic.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I don't know if you're supposed to read the parallels in the movie that were there, but in the Buttercup's Baby, it centers around his grandson, and it centers around him now being happy because he has a relationship with his grandson that he did not have with his fictional son.
I read the introduction where he like goes to Florin. And like the grandson like steals the copy and
mm-hmm. yeah. So it was really,
he really commits
in some ways. I was curious. I don't know if we'll ever know, but how much of it was impacted by the movie, you know, and the impact the movie had, because he does talk about seeing people wearing T-shirts with, you know, with sayings from the movie on it, and how he gets letters and
for sure,
and how it brought hope to people.
Well, and then I think also because, you know, people's outlook on life changes as they get older too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. But, you know, as he got older and he had grandchildren and stuff, I think he also was looking at life a little differently.
Yeah.
And so I think that played into it, but we don't really know. So
he did get divorced into his fictional wife, the psychiatrist. And he ended up getting, having a good relationship with his son. So, you know, so, but no, I thought it was an interesting addendum for those who read the book,
mm-hmm.
you know, the movie ends perfectly.
Did you know about the original ending that they had filmed?
No.
So the way the film ends, which is very beautiful,
mm-hmm.
the grandfather is reading the story about how all of them are on these white horses and they're mm-hmm. going to ride off. And it starts to talk about how Wesley and Buttercup are going to kiss. And it's like, of all the kisses in the world, like then he cuts short because he knows the grandson doesn't want to hear it. And so he just stops. And he's like, that's it? And he's like, oh, it's kissing stuff. You don't want to hear this. And he's like, no, I think it's okay. I can...
Mm-hmm.
I can. It's funny because in midway through the film, there's a bit where he's like, more kissing, and then he's like, someday you're not gonna mind it so mm-hmm. much. but he's like, it's okay, you can read it. And so he reads and he finishes it, and it's like really romantic. Obviously, mm-hmm. like they kiss and the book ends, and it's more of the traditional like fairy tale kind of ending, you know?
Yeah.
But then it ends with the grandpa going to leave, and then the grandson says, would you come back tomorrow and read it to me again?
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, as you wish.
Yeah.
Which, as we know, means...
What does it mean?
I love you.
Oh, yes.
Jeez.
Sorry.
Did you watch the movie?
I did. It's time. I'm tired. It's been a long day.
Jeez. Anyway. So it ends that way. That's how the movie ends.
Mm-hmm.
And the original ending for it, which I'm kind of glad they did not do this, it was kind of the idea of like the story lives on. So the grandpa leaves, and then the grandson like kind of turns over and he looks out his window, and in the sky outside the window appear all the characters on the horses. Like almost like coming to greet him.
Yeah.
And like kind of like waving at him. Mm-hmm. And then he like goes to sleep.
Oh. I feel like they've seen that in other movies before. That kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I like the ending they chose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's fun because the way that they make the movie, it almost opens up the door for rewatching in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I have the board game version of the movie.
The board game version of
it's really good. It's a lot of fun.
Huh, interesting.
It's a co-op game.
Okay.
So you play with each other, not against each other, which is a lot of fun because a lot of games are not like that.
Yeah.
And it's built to resemble a book. And so there's different quote-unquote levels that you go through, but they're chapters.
Interesting.
And so you play through the chapter of the book, and then the board itself flips to the next chapter as if it's like a book.
Huh.
It's a lot of fun. If you like the movie, it's great.
Yeah.
If you don't care about the movie, it's kind
of... Okay.
Oh, another small change is in the book, when Buttercup tries to get away from the three kidnappers, she jumps into the water, and then they're trying to tell her that it's shark infested.
That's
and
right.
They'll come if they smell blood. And then Vizzini like cuts himself and bleeds into the water so that the sharks will come. So then she'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, I think for obvious reasons, they don't want him to like open up a vein.
Yeah.
They changed it from sharks to the shrieking eels.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also worked really well in their favor because it makes it scarier, I think.
Yeah, it does.
I love that bit in it, though, when... Because there's a bit in the book that's similar where he's like, he says, here's where my dad said that the sharks don't eat her. Because I looked concerned and he wanted to make sure I wasn't, that I wasn't scared. And in the movie, they changed it to the eel started to charge. And then it starts to shriek and opens its mouth. And then he stops and he says, the eels don't eat her at this time. And he's like, what? He's like, I wanted to let
you know.
That
was well
done
too,
the eels don't eat her.
Like,
she's okay. And he's like, oh. Okay. And then he's like this whole thing where they're talking and he gets back into the story. He's like, where was I? And it like cuts back to the film, but it's the Peter Fox voice over Vizzini. And he's like, those are the shrinking eels. He's like, pass that, Grandpa. You did that already.
Yeah.
So like there's a couple moments where like it's like the overlay of the film like repeating itself.
Which he does that in the book, but of course it doesn't come across the same way. It does come better, yeah.
It's more funny in the film.
It is.
Like there's small changes like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's some things they had to cut down for, you know, they didn't have the money for it.
No, but I think it was well done. It's a classic for a reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you enjoyed it?
I did.
So did you enjoy the book and the movie?
I did. I enjoyed them both, but for different reasons.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So which one do you like more? It's a hard one.
You know what it is, however...
Because they are different enough.
And so, yeah, like I said, I enjoy them each for their respective purposes. However, the movie is what I grew up with.
Right, I know. It's yeah.
Yeah, so...
It's funny because you come from the movie, and when you read the book, it's almost like another world.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like you're discovering a bunch. It's like, oh, there's so much more to this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more in than like what you would usually get from a book. Like you watch Harry Potter and then you read the book and it's like, oh, there's a lot more in this.
Yeah.
But it's more because it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the whole format because of the medium is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
And so it's like opening a new door to something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I think because I grew up with the film, I like the film a lot. And so I think I'm much more inclined to go back to the film. Although I will say when I was reading this for the podcast, because it was my second time reading it, I was really glad I reread it.
Okay.
Because it was much easier to read the second time.
In what sense? What do you mean by that?
Because I wasn't as confused.
Oh, okay.
Because I just read it to read it.
Yeah.
It's like I was just kind of just reading it. Where the first time I read it, I was like, what's going on? What's happening?
Okay.
Like, I loved it, but I was like, what is going on? I don't... What?
Oh, do you mean, like, his interjections and stuff, like his intro and all that?
Well, it's just like, how much of this is real and,
oh,
and
okay.
things like that. I was like, I was so confused.
Yeah. No, it was a good read and a good movie. But like I said, overall,
Yeah, we grew up with a movie.
So who's your favorite character? It was the albino, wasn't it?
No. it's this one's a hard one.
Like I said, all the characters really stand out. Like, they're so iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Each and every one of them. They just, there's some movies you watch and then it's almost kind of forgettable. But this one, like, every character is just so memorable.
I would have to say that my favorite in the book was definitely Inigo.
In the book?
In the book.
Okay, why? Because of all his backstory?
Because of all the backstory.
Sure.
Yeah. And so therefore you spend more time with him. And so you get to know him a lot
better. Funny, his backstory felt the most like a novel to me.
Yeah.
Like his really felt like almost like Quixotic.
Mm-hmm. And so I think for him, yeah, no, for me that was, and in the movie, I've always loved Vizzini.
Because it's you, right?
In some ways.
He didn't fall. Inconceivable. So during COVID, there was this thing online, and you can find it on YouTube in its entirety. It was for something. Like, they were raising money for something. I don't remember what it was. But it was on some social media or something. Now it's on YouTube, where a bunch of big-name actors mm-hmm. were doing excerpts from The Princess Bride and, like, recreating it.
Yeah.
But during COVID quarantine.
Okay.
And so they would record it separately, and then it was, like, all submitted as one. And so the characters, the actors changed and stuff. Some of them, you could really tell, like, which one of them, like, came to it very seriously and, like, tried to, like, really recreate it. And others that, like, did not take it seriously.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's a scene where I was like, why? There's a scene in it where, and I think if only just to make it more interesting, because it was a scene where it was just a lot of walking. There's a scene where... one of them, it's like a husband and wife, I'm assuming, and they're like, I don't know who they were because I don't know a lot of modern actors.
Yeah,
but they're, it's the scene where he's explaining the story. Wesley's explaining the story about how he became the Dread Pirate Roberts to Buttercup, and in the story, as they're walking through the forest and things, like the it's supposed to be the fire swamp.
Crap.
And at one point, it just like randomly like flips, and all of a sudden, the husband who was playing Wesley is now playing Buttercup, and then the wife is now playing Wesley, and like they've switched lines and their costumes have changed. And I was like, yeah, I guess that was kind of funny, but why? But some of the funnier ones were the ones that took it very seriously, actually. There was a scene where it cut back and forth, and it was funny because they had to like use like dummies and things, so it made it really funny. There's a bit where, I don't know if you know The Office, where Vizzini, Fezzik, and Inigo were played by the accountants from The Office. Okay. So it was Angela as Vizzini, Oscar was Inigo. Yeah, Brian Baumgartner, who played Kevin, played Fezzik.
That's funny.
And they played it so well. Like, I was like, I could watch this whole movie with them. But
yeah.
Can you just imagine Angela Martin just feeling something like, you're supposed to be this great thing, and yet he gains. And then Jennifer Gardner played Buttercup in the scene where she has the nightmare and the hag is booing her. And she like was going for an Oscar. I swear, she did such a good job. Even though she was playing to a bunch of stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Like, she really committed to that scene. I was like, wow, she's doing a good job.
I'll have to look those up.
Yeah, there's definitely parts in it where you're like, let's skip ahead. But there's some really good nuggets in there.
That's funny.
I don't know my favorite in the book. I don't know if I have a favorite in the book.
Okay.
I don't know if any one of them stood out enough in the book for me to care enough, if that makes sense. Like, not in a bad way, just so much as, like, none of them really just was like, I love that one, you know?
Yeah.
If anything, just, I actually enjoyed the fake Goldman.
Okay.
So if that counts, then sure, how about that?
Okay.
In the movie, I really want to say Wesley is my favorite, but I'm going to say Miracle Max.
Okay. Yeah.
I could watch just his scene. And then Carol Kane plays off him so well.
Yeah, she does. I would love if they had, you know, the outtakes
I thought you were going to say, like, the spinoff. It's like Miracle Max, the spinoff.
Today they would have that. They would. But no, like, because, you know, I forget what I was watching one time. Different movies, actually. They say they've done this with, you've told me about this, like, in some of the past movies with Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah, well,
Dom
you know
DeLuise
they have a bunch of footage somewhere because it was, like, 3 days of filming.
Mm-hmm. Where they just have uncut footage of them going on.
We didn't even mention that Christopher Guest, who played Count Rugen, and Mandy Patinkin, who played Inigo Montoya, and Cary Elwes, who played Wesley, all did their own sword fighting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rob Reiner went to all three of them at the very beginning, and he said, I do not want to use doubles.
Okay.
He's like, I want to see you guys do it.
Uh-huh.
And Cary Elwes is like, I have never fenced before, and I don't really consider myself athletic. But I was very grateful for the part, so as soon as he said that, I said, okay. But they had, like, really great, like, sword masters to teach them and stuff. But they said literally it was months.
Wow.
Months. 8 hours a day they were training.
Wow.
And it was, like, anytime, like, someone would, they would take breaks or something, like, they'd be sword fighting. Like, they'd be
That's
learning.
Funny. That's cool. That's and, actually really cool.
But a lot of work.
Yeah.
And they said that in order to make sure they had enough time to film it, they made it so that the big sword fight between Inigo Montoya and Wesley was the last thing they filmed.
Hmm.
So that they would have all of production to practice.
Okay.
And they, because in that scene especially, they have to fight left-handed and right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to learn how to sword fight both ways.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And they, it was funny because they said what made it worse is for safety reasons and to not get hurt. They, for safety reasons, they made them learn everybody else's part. So like in that scene, Wesley had to learn how to fight with his left hand, but then he also had to learn all of Inigo's part.
Okay.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
So then they would know exactly what was going to happen, and they would know it so well that, like, nobody would get hurt. It's funny because they said, so you did all your own stunts. He's like, yeah, basically. And he's like, so was that you, like, rolling down the ravine? He's like, no, that was a double.
So, yeah, not the dangerous stunts.
Just the sword fighting.
Just the sword fighting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, there's a bit where Cary Elwes had said that Andre the Giant had, in order to get around, like, they got him an ATV.
Oh, okay.
And because he's so big.
Yeah.
And they asked him, like, on his farm back home, like, what do you use? He's like, I use an ATV. He's like, oh, okay. So they said they got, like, the only ATV they could find in England in the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every day, Andre the Giant would say to Cary Elwes, like, you like my toy? He's like, you want to try it? And he's like, no, it's okay, it's okay. And then eventually he's like, fine, like, I'll try it.
Yeah.
And he barely went anywhere at all. And then he, like, got his, like, foot, like, caught in something. And he broke his toe.
Oh, wow.
He broke his big toe.
That's funny.
And so he was like, they, like, called the nurse in. And he's like, we should go to the hospital. He's like, nope. Nope. He's like, can you just do something here? It's just like, I guess I can try and make a splint for you. And so he's like in really big pain. He's like, don't tell Rob Reiner. Like, I don't want to get kicked off this film. That's like, he said he hadn't even started learning the sword fighting yet.
Yeah.
He's like, this is the perfect time for him to kick me out. He's like, I haven't learned anything yet. And so he like went and he like admitted it finally that day to Rob Reiner, because Rob Reiner like clearly knew.
Yeah.
And he had heard over the walkie-talkies and everything. And he's like, I'm so sorry. Like, he's like, please don't fire me. He's like, no, I'm not going to do it. We'll work around it. It's fine. Don't worry. And it's funny because he said, if you pay attention to the film, like, you can actually tell a lot of the times when he's very ginger about his foot.
Mm.
Like, the way he walks, like, you can kind of tell. Like, when you know that.
Yeah. It's all the little things. Yeah. That's
all right. You want to move on to our last thing? What type of adaptation?
All right. What type of adaptation is it?
This is our normal spiel here, so bear with me if you've heard our podcast before. This is the part of our podcast where we talk about what type of adaptation is this. And again, if you've heard our podcast before, you've heard this before. But if you have not, and this is your first time, thank you for listening. We love it that you're listening.
If you are interested, please listen to the trailer for our podcast where we talk about the different types of adaptations that we have come up with. And we go more in detail in it. But the four types for the purpose that we talk about are true to the source material, expanded, artistic, and message-driven. So, Romy, what do you think for The Princess Bride?
The funny thing is,
I was thinking about it. I was. Go ahead.
It's the opposite of expanded.
I know. I should have come up with condensed.
Yeah. It's so. we can say expanded / condensed, because that's really what it is.
Sure. It's not true to the source material, and yet it is.
Yeah.
Like the plot's the same.
Mm-hmm.
But there were definitely major changes.
Yes. And like because of the whole tone, if you will, is changed.
Right.
So you can read the book with the tone of the movie to some degree. I think in my mind, that's kind of how I did it.
This one really doesn't fit into any category very well.
Yeah. So it's true to source material, but condensed at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose you could make the argument that it's message driven and that it's definitely more
hopeful
and it gives the audience more of what they expect instead of being more very satirical and stuff, but I'll go with your weird quasi expanded.
It's a chimera.
Yes. Okay. I don't want to think about it anymore because it doesn't fit any category very well.
Yes.
This is a brand new category. It's just called The Princess Bride.
Yes.
Anytime we come up to any other thing, we'll say this was The Princess Bride.
That's going to be our new category. Yes. The Princess Bride category.
Yes.
Cool.
Great. Anything else you want to say before we finish up?
No. I think that's about it for this one.
All right. I was thinking, how do I end this podcast? And I was thinking of all the stupidest things I could say. Like, and for all you out there, as you wish. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Those are the podcasts that I'm like, well, I'm not listening to that one anymore.
I did watch a YouTube video where the guy opened with a modified version of Inigo Montoya's line.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
When I hear things like that, I'm like, and now I am done.
Yes.
I tried. All right. Well, thanks for listening to our podcast.
Yes.
I hope you all enjoyed this one. This one's kind of supposed to be our Valentine's Day episode a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to come out a little bit after Valentine's. But I really hope you enjoyed this. I hope you learned something. I will tell you right now, if you go and you look up behind the scenes information for The Princess Bride, 6 out of the 10 things you will come up with are all going to tell you the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So basically what you've heard on this podcast is what you're going to hear elsewhere. So I hope we saved you some time.
All condensed into one podcast.
Yeah, I will say Cary Elwes has, and in coordination with other people, created a book about the making of The Princess Bride called As You Wish.
I think I might actually have that book.
And so if you're very interested in the making of The Princess Bride, the movie, I recommend go looking that up because he goes very much into detail on the actual behind the scenes and the making of it. So if that's your cup of tea, there you go.
Awesome. I have to go through all my stuff and see if I actually have it.
I think the audiobook version, I think he actually narrates it.
Oh, that's cool. I'll have to look on, see if it's on Spotify.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. Tune in
everyone.
Next time.
Thank you. We are glad you join us.
Yes, we're slowly coming into the end of our second season. I think we have a couple more months after this one until we take our break again.
Yes.
But thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you find this entertaining.
I hate ending our podcasts.
I know. Good night.
All right, everybody, take care.
See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.